This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. Dave Bourne is on vacation this week. Thank you for joining us for Newsmakers. This is your noon hour every Monday through Friday, where we talk about things that affect your pocketbook, affect your quality of life, or just fun and interesting things happening in the Salem-Keizer area and in Dallas and Polk, Dallas, all of Polk County, and everywhere our voices are heard. So thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about a topic today, and I've got a guest today, kind of intersects with all of these things we want to know about affecting our pocketbook, affecting our quality of life, affecting our city and its amenities and its entertainment value, educational efforts, all sorts of things. It all intersects with one profession, and that profession is architecture. And how does that work? Because you look at an architect, and if an architect doesn't have any work, that means nobody's investing in your community. If an architect and their firm have a ton of work and they don't know what to do with it, that means a ton of things are happening in your community. You can also look at engineering firms and whether they have a backlog of work to figure out, are we headlong into a recession coming up at any moment? Which, you know, people fear because we've been growing the economy for too long, apparently. I don't seem to agree, and knowing a lot of people in the engineering and architecture field, they're all busy, folks. They are all busy. And so it might be a good time to go to architecture school, but we're going to find out because my guest today is Alan Kostick of AC & Company. He's the president. He's been around 2 or 3 years there now, and we're going to talk a little bit about the industry, the education involved, what kind of pipeline is showing up for all the architecture firms in town, all sort of special fields, keeping business in Salem, all this good stuff, and the kind of projects he's worked on over the years, including some incredible projects downtown. Welcome to the studio, Alan.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Nice to have you. So you have been an architect in this town for since when?
Since 1986.
1986. Yeah. But your firm last year celebrated a huge milestone.
Yes, we celebrated our 60th anniversary.
Wow.
The firm known as Warren & Karkin Architect was formed in 1958. And we are a legacy of that firm, now clearly in our second generation, kind of the aging second generation as we're starting to transition into our third.
That is cool. So, and it wasn't that many years ago that you went through a name change and became AC & Company.
That's
which,
correct.
If you look at your logo, it's like architecture and community, right?
It's kind of an interesting mix because we went from Arbuckle Kostick to AC & Company Architecture Community. We thought it was more generic. Kim retired about 9 years ago, and with my three partners, it just seemed to be the right thing to do. And we did that about 3 years ago.
Okay, just 3 years ago. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that as far as the culture of the firm, because I know community has been an element. And both being involved, encouraging your partners and your employees to be involved in the community.
Absolutely.
And kind of being part of the pulse, especially of the downtown area, right? How did you inherit that as a culture when you were a young architect and came into it? Or is it something that you and Kim Arbuckle developed?
Actually, it was something that I brought when I came to the firm in 86. I had come from a practice in Oklahoma City, we were seeking a place that we wanted to live, and we're looking at capital cities, university towns, 100 to 300,000 people, and at that time Salem filled that bill to a T, but while in Oklahoma City, I was involved in a very large project that ended up getting national attention. It had to do with involving the entire fifth grade class of the Oklahoma City School District in designing a project. And the project was to design a learning station in space, a school in space. And it won a number of national awards. And when I ended up coming to Salem, it turned out that someone in the Salem-Keizer School District had been at a conference in D.C. and heard about this project and was inquiring about it. And I said, well, where are you from? And they said, Salem, Oregon. I said, well, I think the guy who chaired this is now in Salem, Oregon.
Right.
Literally, I was here a week. I got a phone call from the Salem-Keizer School District and found myself chairing a committee for the district within my first 2 weeks living in Salem.
Wow. That's a nice head start.
So, but the firm had always been involved in the community. We probably took it a step further, Kim and I, encouraging our staff to get involved in ways that they had a passion. And through whether it be coaching Little League, getting on city committees, working in the Downtown Association, boards, organizations, and we not only encourage it, we provide office time for our staff to do that, and we still do today.
So what size firm is AC & Company?
We have typically been in that 10 to 20 range, and that's exactly where we are now, usually having about half of our staff licensed architects or interior designers, and we have some support staff. Draftsmen, we always bringing interns in. It's one of those ways we give back to the profession. Somebody, there were good architects when I was growing up that taught me the ways, and we find it's pretty important to do that again. And our high water mark was actually in the late 90s when we had almost 30 employees.
Wow.
And that was getting to the point where we were becoming managers instead of architects, and we made a decision. No, at least for the time being, Kim and I wanted to continue to be architects, and we kind of put the brakes on our growth.
Well, there's so many cool things that you've been a part of, and we'll talk about them after the break when it comes to downtown and all of the things that cascaded. But I know that moving downtown was a conscious choice, right? Locating on Court Street.
State Street.
And, describe for me that period of time in downtown and when you're opening your office.
Well, actually, when I arrived in 86, 87, a good part of State Street, particularly between Commercial and Liberty, were boarded up buildings. And in fact, the building that we eventually bought was boarded up at that time.
Right.
Carol Smith and Eric Kelson actually bought it and had repurposed it for a gallery type of space. And when Kim and I approached them to purchase the building, now about 25 years ago, there still wasn't much happening on that particular part of the downtown, but we made a conscious effort to invest in our downtown. Ironically, maybe serendipitously, in the month of October when we opened up our building, Mavalise opened up that same month, and across the alley from us, a dress shop called Byzantium had opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really what I would consider the start of the renaissance of State Street.
And this is even prior to even having Riverfront Park, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well before that.
Yeah, that's actually another story. But but we made that investment, I think State Street is a wonderful example of how, private family businesses have been thriving in our downtown, our restaurants and art galleries. And of course, we're still anchored by U.S. Bank, which is a wonderful neighbor, and it's a great place to be.
That is cool. We're going to talk more about things you've done downtown and also the state of the industry, because we want to know what it's like in the economy out there. And should we expect more growth in Salem? Should we expect more investment in Salem, and what your pipeline looks like? We're talking to Alan Kostick of AC & Company, and you're listening to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart for 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart, and Dave Bourne is on vacation this week. And we miss him. We hope he's having a good time. We're talking to AC & Company President Alan Kostick. AC & Company is as a company that's been here for 60, going to 61 years. And I want to know is how much work is out there to be had? Because if someone's going to build something, and that someone being a developer or a government, right, or even a homeowner, if someone's going to do something, they typically have to go through an architect. So how busy are you?
We're busy.
We're busy. Could you use another body or two on your team?
We could use another body or two on our team. It's been a good market the last 3 years or so, and it was a very much needed good market after going through the recession. In my career in Oregon, we've seen about three recessions, two of which were felt, the most recent one severely felt.
Yeah.
And it had an impact, all through the state for that matter, but definitely we felt it here. And again, interestingly, the early stages of the recession, we were actually growing still because we were fortunate enough to have work with our local school district and mm-hmm. our community college, and that kept us well-fueled for the first couple of years. And because of the nature of our practice, which is a general practice, and with approximately half of our work in the public sector and half of it in the private sector,
yeah, really,
we have a good balance of work typically. But by the latter parts of that recession, both of those were drying up.
Yeah. Thank goodness we passed a couple of bond measures, so you had some work to do. Okay, so do you see it falling off? Are you looking into the near horizon? Oh, this work is going to fall off, or is that too far outside the tunnel?
For primarily, my responsibilities in the office have been early client communications and design, and rainmaking. I've brought in a good deal of the work and established a good deal for our clientele, either one, by continuing relationships that had been built up over the years and in many cases building new relationships. And at this point in time, and so I'm always looking to keep work out in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
We typically have enough on the boards to keep everyone going. What I'm concerned about is what does it look like 6, 12, 18 months from now, or even further still.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point in time, we are looking very strong. We're based on our staffing and our capabilities, we're almost at capacity for 2019.
At capacity for 2019. That means you can keep everybody in the office busy with the work you have right now.
Yeah.
Wow. What about the other firms in town?
Everyone's pretty solid right now. We have a very good architectural community here in Salem. There's a half dozen firms that are capable of doing substantial work and doing high quality work. Then there's a number of onesie twosie type firms within the community that may be a little more specialized in a particular type of work or doing residential work.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone seems to be pretty solid, and I think they're all in the same position that we are, and that is trying to attract skilled and talented workers here.
Yeah, so you wouldn't describe the relationship or the amongst the architecture firms in town as cutthroat or anything like that?
Oh, no.
You have different personalities in the firms, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and we all have our idiosyncrasies and perhaps some specialties that we do better than others, and we have our relationships with our clients, and just like we try to stay loyal to our clients, we hope our clients stay loyal to us, and I think everyone feels in that same way. But we do compete occasionally,
mm-hmm.
And it's what I would say a pretty friendly competition. We're a collegial group. We all are in the same professional organizations and meet regularly. One of our biggest concerns, as a universal concern, is how we keep these design services that are taking place in Salem with Salem professionals.
With Salem professionals. Keep the money in Salem.
It'd be nice.
All right. So how big does a project have to be? Is there a complexity, a segment, or a size of project in which somebody needs to go outside of Salem?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely some areas that are so complex today. And I as you well know, I spent 9 years on the hospital board. Mm-hmm. Went on when the last tower was being built, and I think that's one of the reasons I was asked to come on to bring a little bit of expertise to the board. I understand they're looking at building again, but a $200, $300, $400 million hospital tower is probably beyond the capability of anybody in town. Mm-hmm. There may be some folks in Portland, but typically something like that, you almost have to go national.
Wow.
I know with our new police station that's under construction not too far from here, they went to some expertise that we did not have in town, although a local firm is associated with them, CB2, which is great to keep at least a portion of that project in town. But yeah, there are projects that do get to the point of complexity that it's beyond the market, not necessarily just the Salem market.
Yeah, you need a firm that's maybe more specialized and maybe has more than 20 people.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And speaking of CB2, I think one of their distinctions is they have a construction arm as well, right?
Yeah. However, I don't know how much of their own work they're actually building. I saw a bit more of it years ago. I'm not seeing as much now. They seem to be working with the local contractors more and more. So I'm not sure what the state of that is.
How many firms in town do as much public work as you do? Because you've got school district, and with the bond measure being passed, you probably have multiple years lined up that you'll have to be doing some work, right?
We hope so.
Yeah.
We certainly hope so. We actually submitted a proposal yesterday for a project with Salem Kaiser School District, so we'll see.
You still have to earn it. You still have to bid into the government process.
We're on the preferred list. We still have to earn it, though. No, but there are firms like Carlson Veit, who I believe may even be a little older than us in terms of legacy, do a lot of public work. CB2 is getting more and more into that with their work here now with the police station. Studio 3 will do public work.
They do housing as well, right?
CB2, Studio 3, and Lenity all do housing work, both in the state and a lot of it all over the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, of course, we have to have the land use laws that allow us to have more housing to be able to. That's a whole other topic on another newsmakers. Is there anybody in Salem that has specialist credentials or experience that if you're going to do it in Oregon, you're going to hire this person? I'm thinking of you actually in terms of you helped with, didn't you help with OSU in the baseball field?
Yeah, we did.
Any part of the Volcanoes one?
We did the Volcano Stadium, and as a result of the success there.
Did you know what you were doing, Alan?
Yes, okay. Only because I played a lot of baseball. and I observed how baseball stadiums work. Actually, as a kid, I would draw little stadiums, on the kitchen table in terms of how I would like to see a ballpark done. But we did have the chance to do Volcano Stadium. In fact, Mike McLaren opened up that door for us, and we're very grateful. And then a couple years later, when Oregon State was looking at replacing their baseball stadium, I saved stadium because the field itself is still in its original position on campus. In fact, it's the longest active playing baseball surface on any college campus in the nation.
What?
That's true. And there was actually discussion of moving it off campus, but the university president at the time said, no, this is really unique. And one of our challenges was to design a stadium in the middle of campus that fit into campus. So there's covered walkways so students can walk from one class to another and stay out of the rain a little bit in a building, in a structure that looked like buildings on campus.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a great ballpark.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great place to go. I love going there. I mean, it's almost time to start watching games down there again, right? Okay. So your pipeline's full. You think that your competitors or the other firms in town, that they're full. Are there times that there's projects? Well, let me just back up. If you're full, that means there's economic activity. And that's the whole point here today on Newsmakers is trying to say, hey, if you're watching and reading I won't be economist, but talking heads about the economy and investments and all that stuff. Everybody seems to think there should be a recession because it's time for a recession. But if you look at the economic activity, at least in the Willamette Valley and in Salem, there are things happening between the government and private sector. People are in building, they're investing, they're developing. And that's a great sign for a lot of jobs and job stability and the whole construction market, the whole chain, right? Because the recession hurt you, obviously. Yeah, if it hurt you, then it hurt engineers.
Yes.
And it hurt designers.
It hurt so many people. Whether you're looking at hiring the design professionals themselves or other support people, because, you know, we hire a whole team when we're working on a complex project. Even a simple project, we have a cadre of engineers and specialists that work with us. So there's jobs there. And then, of course, it filters down to the construction industry where there's scores more jobs. Mm-hmm. And then eventually those dollars that are being invested in construction are being spent in the community. And what I've heard is, you know, a 6 to 8 time multiplier on construction dollars.
Wow.
So
holy
it's
cow.
A big deal.
All right. We're talking to Alan Kostick of AC & Company. He's the president. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about downtown. Things that have happened that are exciting, some of the anecdotes about those things that are going to happen. And I also want to touch on, hey, should somebody go to school right now to become an architect? So stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart, and Dave Bourne's on vacation. Little known fact, shared with Alan Kostick, is our guest today of AC & Company. When I went to high school, I thought of architecture as a career. When my son went to high school, he thought of architecture as a career. So something about the mix between creativity and the construction, the build part of and the permanence part, it's just very attractive. And in addition to the fact that the industry does intersect with so many elements of our economic activity in town. So thanks for being here, Alan. President of AC & Company, I promised you we're going to talk about downtown because then Arbuckle Kostick, or even a previous name, you opened the doors in State Street, a lot of boarded up buildings. Since then, we've seen such incredible things happen. And actually, since in the last 10 years, really, people upstairs, downstairs. I remember when the firm was working on the jewelry store on Liberty.
Correct.
Right? That's when it really started. I started paying attention to, well, look what they're doing downtown. What has been some of your favorite projects that you've had your hand in? And I know a couple of more. I can't name the buildings as well as you you can. So what kind of things have you had your hand in that were really special?
Well, you mentioned Vernon Jewelers, and who would have thought that gem of a brick building was underneath all that stucco that was there for years? Remember, it was the frozen yogurt store. And then I think Subway after that. But there are a lot of hidden gems in our downtown. And we've had the good fortune of working on scores of them, and uncovering second or third story spaces that hadn't been used for years. In fact, our building was built in 1917 and has a long history, including during days of Prohibition, there was a smoke shop in our building, but in the back room, it was a speakeasy.
Wow.
And I've heard from longtime historians in our downtown as they step in the office and say, oh yeah, there were more of the state business taking place in your back room than was down the street. So our downtown is full of those sort of stories. It has been nice, kind of chipping away and uncovering these jewels that exist down there. We had good fortune with Doug Doty and the McGilchrist Roth building just down the street from us. And creating a whole block of both professional, retail, dining spaces, bar spaces.
Yeah, incredible.
That have really enlivened at least our part of the downtown.
Let's touch on that. We got to give kudos to Doug Doty and to Gail Calderazzo Doty as well for, honestly, that project of passion. Because, hey, Doug, if you're listening, we know if you had any sense, you wouldn't have done that. That was a lot of money, and it was a lot of risk. But it was a lot of just pouring investment of himself and his capital into downtown. So we ended up, and if you're not familiar, listener, that's how we have Ritter's Restaurant. It's how we have the Archive. It's how we have living space above those two spaces. And of course,
nine apartment units.
Nine apartment units for downtown living. Nice ones, too. And of course, Doty and Company, Doty Pruitt Wilson. Our CPAs are in the building, and the candy shop, I'm not allowed in the candy shop.
And there's a little finance office as well.
That's right, the finance office. So that was it. Was two historic buildings that and you kind of separated them and gave them their own identity back to an extent. Mm-hmm. Right. So in the olden days, every building had a different name.
Correct.
Based on who built them or who inhabited them something.
Our building was the Farrar Building, and it was. A dad building a building for his daughter.
Wow.
In
1917. And you said about the jewelry building, Vernon's. I would say Werner's because that's a ginger ale. Vernon's. So that brick facade got covered up over the years. So really, you just uncovered that. Wow. And the new canopies, of course. And the
canopies,
you know, it's a huge part of the ambiance downtown that second floor.
We do have a little rain in our country.
Indeed.
And to have those covered areas on our walkways are just so nice because it makes the downtown accessible even on days that are not necessarily so pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do have that nice weather in the summertime, you get a little bit of shade.
There you go.
So it does serve purposes and also helps the whole scale of walking around our downtown. You're walking under a 10-foot high canopy versus next to a 30-foot facade of a building.
Right.
And just makes a big difference.
So speaking of which, a lot of this historic downtown area it does have a second floor. Mm-hmm. And there are huge challenges with – there's one thing about getting the ground floor repurposed and fixed up. But the second floor and getting it repurposed for productive use is a challenge.
Particularly if it's for public use.
Because you need to first for public use, so offices and retail and so forth, because you have to comply now with earthquake standards and Americans with
ADA.
Disabilities Act,
yeah.
So an elevator.
Fire and life safety issues, there's energy issues that we have to address as well.
So what about structural? I mean, if you go in, and I know they've done a lot of work there across the street from Ritter's,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're repurposing that. Are they having to put in new support technology for earthquakes and things like that?
Yeah, even in our building, which we restored 25 years ago, we brought it up considerably in seismic standards. So essentially, if we did have a substantial earthquake, our building should not fall down. So we're taking care of the lives that are in that building. Now, how usable it may be afterwards is another question because it's all unreinforced masonry. But we did brace it. We put in shear walls. We did similar things with the Doty project as well. That is one of the challenges. And of course, with Doug's building, where we had the nine apartments up above, now we're into a public building now.
Mm-hmm.
We're changing the occupancy, which triggers a lot more code requirements for us. But providing an elevator and accessibility to that second floor was required in that building.
So an owner has a building downtown, and it's historic, and they want to do something upstairs. How do they get it to pencil with all these requirements? I mean, a lot of these regulations, of course, they're well-intentioned. We do want them collapsing on human beings, and we want people to get to them. But then it seems to conflict with also the well-intentioned desire to protect a historic building. So that conflict, how do you get it to pencil out?
Oh, that's an interesting question. they're not always, in fact, very rarely are they compatible. And when you're trying to deal with fire and life safety issues, you're trying to deal with ADA issues, you're trying to deal with historic preservation requirements, you do one and you're in violation of something else.
Mm.
And to some degree, you have to leave it to the discretion of the code officials and say, okay, tell us which laws you want us to break. because if you're going to comply one place, you're going to not comply someplace else. So there's a thoughtful process to have to go through to make sure these things work. And we've done enough of it over the years that we're able to understand the complexities and try to work our way through those issues.
I mean, some of those second floors in downtown, well, fortunately, a lot of them have been done. A Metropolitan Building has housing and all these great things. But a lot of them were fallow for many, many
That's
years.
Great. Yeah, I was telling you a story earlier about a building on Court Street where we were renovating the upper floor for a resident. And literally, when we went into the building, the only things that we saw were pigeons in their remains and a pin-up poster of Betty Grable on the wall, which gave you some indication that they hadn't been occupied since the 40s.
What? 40s?
The 40s.
Wow, there's just something wrong there.
So, and we turned it into a very modern, beautiful apartment downtown. And that's not unusual. But that one, we did not have to deal with the ADA requirements because it was a private residence.
Okay. They could have a walk-up.
But if indeed we were looking at multiple facilities up there, anything accessible to the public, then we're getting into elevators, in which on a small individual building plot is probably, it, like you said, it doesn't pencil out.
All right. We're talking to Alan Kostick of AC & Company Architects about downtown Salem. So some of the people who are early innovators or ahead of the curve in downtown, it seemed like downtown is not a place where people are going to go make money. But I'm feeling, and it's not a feeling, it's not an educated feeling too much, but I'm feeling that this is an era where somebody really could invest in downtown, in these old buildings or in brand new development, and end up making money. Is this a good time to be investing in downtown Salem?
I believe so. And when you look at the costs and the demands that are happening in downtown Portland right now, just astronomical. And they're actually starting to run out of building lots to deal with. And in terms of regulations, they're much more stringent than we are here in Salem. For Portland developers to look at a real opportunity of investment in a downtown area, I think Salem is ripe for the picking.
Are we ever going to see a building that's taller than the Capitol Center?
I hope so. We actually had one on the books a few years ago, but it unfortunately did not go anywhere.
Well, let's hope it gets resurrected, huh? Okay, so downtown, you see, are there projects that you're working on you can talk to us about?
Downtown.
Something to look forward to?
Well, we just completed Parkfront, which was a nice local project for local businesses, local investment. We've had the good fortune of doing the majority work on our riverfront, from the Gilbert House Children's Museum to the
Carousel.
Pavilion, the carousel, and actually we're looking at an addition to the carousel right now, which we hope we'll see in the next couple of years. It'll be a second building called the Stables, and will be a place where the carvers can do their carving and the painters can do their painting. It would be and become part of the interpretive tour of the facility. We're excited about that.
Wow. And how many of those can you see in the United States?
Probably none.
The painting and the carving and the ride all in one place.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
None. We have been working with the Howard Street School, and they're looking at a location in our downtown. Doing a couple of things with some businesses downtown that I really can't talk about too much right now.
Understood.
But nonetheless, we continue to look at development down there. And actually, Doug Doty and I discuss growth in our downtown, particularly housing growth in our downtown, on a monthly basis.
I bet. A lot of exciting things. We're going to take our last break here and come back and finish it up and talk about the state of the industry in general, education that's required, and whether or not you or your student should go into this field. You're listening to Newsmakers. Stick with us. This is 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Horn, who is out this week. One of the main reasons I wanted to have our current guest on not only does it intersect with downtown, which I'm a proponent of, but try to get an idea in the community about economic activity and make sure that people aren't thinking we need to have a recession because we're due for a recession. There was actually, I heard a story from a bank who's cutting back on lending because they think we're due for a recession. And that's like a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of, well, we're going to cut back. Well, if you're cutting back, then some of the project's not going to get funded, and then it's going to create a downturn. So right now, folks, I want to give you some optimism about the Willamette Valley. My contacts who are in the engineering field, both civil and structural, are they're slammed to the walls. They are slammed to the walls, and they can't find enough engineers. So that means they've got work that they'll eventually pass along with or work in conjunction with people like Alan Kostick at AC & Company and the other architecture firms in town. So it's important for us all to know that there is more coming, and there's reason for people to be optimistic about continued investment in Salem, despite the fact that we don't have enough bridge crossings. Whole nother story. I'm not going to put Alan Kostick through that. Anyway, thanks for being here again, Alan. I want to before we run out of time this hour, I want to know about the career. Is this a career that people should be thinking about going into? I know in Oregon, you have to go to University of Oregon or to Portland State to get an architecture degree, correct?
Right.
And how many years does it take to get that degree? At least five?
Minimum five, yes.
Minimum five.
For the first professional degree.
And that's when, if you've decided when you go in that that's what you want to do, right? If you wait for 2 years and then you decide it's longer.
Well, I know when I went to school at Montana State University, which at that time was a five-year program. It's now a 4+1 master's degree. But I remember standing in the lobby when the dean of the school came out, and he says, look at the person on your right, look at the person on your left. They will not be here when you graduate. Of the 160-some people that started when I did, 22 of us made it through.
Out of 160?
Yeah.
Guess it sounds...
And largely, and you raised the issue earlier, we have a unique combination of skills that we have to bring to the table. There's the artsy side of architecture, and then there's the technical side, the science side, and it's a really interesting mix to create buildings that enhance the experience, but also are going to withstand all the issues that we have to deal with. And then there's a political side to it, because you're constantly having to move through the system to get things built these days and be effective as you do it. And there's the business side to keep the doors open.
Right. You got to be a business manager. That is a lot of hats for a person.
There's a lot of things going on. You're absolutely correct. There are two licensed school or accredited schools of architecture in the state of Oregon, University of Oregon and Portland State. There are about 70 programs around the country, maybe a little more now, that are accredited. And they vary from a 5 years bachelor to a 4+2 master's program. And either the 5-year Bachelor of Architecture or the Master's of Architecture is considered your first professional degree. And you need that first professional degree to begin your internship program, which can last up to 3 years to get the necessary experience to start to sit for the exam. The exam is a multi-part exam. I think there may be 8 or 9 parts now. I remember there were 5 when I went through. In order to call yourself an architect, you have to go through all those steps.
And so at the end of that step, the goal is that you are a professional architect.
Correct.
And not an architect
intern. A registered
intern,
architect, yes.
And you can sign those documents,
you
right?
You can go out and get the stamp and put it on the documents and sign it. That's
so the young people who are graduating today, are they going to get hired up?
Well, the ones that are graduating today are going to be highly sought. Because the profession is very hot right now, and it's interesting because we have found over the years that Salem will attract a certain type of person that will stay here. Mm-hmm. And one may be someone who had roots here in Salem when they were growing up. They may have friends here. They may be looking for that place that you've described oftentimes on your show that is this unique community of Salem. It has so many things going for it because of its superposition in the state and our recreational, our quality of life. It's a mm-hmm. great place to raise a family. Those are the people that we found to be very attractive, and they've not only come into our office, but some of them have retired in our office just because they've loved it here and they've not gone anywhere else.
Interesting. I actually have a contact, a client who is an architect, and he's, I would never buy a building that was born, that was made, you know, any newer than, you know, the 40s or something like that. And those older neighborhoods are quite attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
You get a little bit of a neighborhood feel, and not everybody, even the millennials, not everybody wants that metro big city feel. So that neighborhood and the family thing is critical. All right, so they're going to get hired. So that's a little hard to have a crystal ball to know whether our high school juniors and high school seniors should go
into
the
field. But we're also talking about a minimum 8-year experience line to get to that point. And none of us have the crystal ball as to what's going to be looking like 8 years from now.
So do people, how often have you seen in your decades people come into the profession and have it lead to something else? When they went to school for this, but then they decide, well, I'm not going to do a career architecture, but I've had an opportunity in development, or I have an opportunity in design, or I have an opportunity in something that's allied to the industry.
There's a number of different ways that can go. And you mentioned within construction industry, architects working in the construction and development industry. They stay in academics and teach. They work for the government. They work for planning commissions and so on and so forth, guiding those along. They help address code issues. So there's a lot of ways that it can go beyond just the traditional architect. But even within an office our size, there are so multiple skills that are necessary, and what we try to do is find where the strengths of our employees are and let them do that stuff all day long, rather than force them into something that they don't necessarily like. Great thing that I had in my career is when Kim was my partner, Kim Arbuckle, we both had varying skills. He loved to do things that I hated. I did the things that he didn't want to do. We rarely stepped on each other's toes because we were always doing our own thing, and it was the perfect complement in terms of doing good business, doing great design, and getting buildings built.
Well, it sounds like it could be a great profession, and somebody, despite no matter what their personality set is, could fill one of those roles in an architecture career. It doesn't have to be the figurehead or the rainmaker. Frankly, Alan, I think you fit that bill where you can be politically talented in terms of talking with people, and you also have to be a business manager, and you also have the artistic side, and then you have to make sure that the engineers don't get too mad at you and say, hey, Alan, we can't build that. That technology doesn't exist. All right, we've been talking this hour with Alan Kostek, ACN Company President, a firm that goes back 61 years and a lot to do with developing downtown, and they're packed. They are packed to the gills with work. So that's good to know, and we got some projects coming out of the ground. I hope to have him back and enjoy talking to him again. Anything else, advice for you got 5 seconds. Advice to architect, go out and do it.
I appreciate you asking their questions today. It's good for people to hear what we're doing.
Thank you, Alan. This has been Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.